do better today.
Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me.
That's right. We're going to find our strength not only in the Creator, but in the Almighty people. We welcome you to Missing Pages of History. Like always, we are here to serve the underserved community, and we are here to serve you, our listening audience, where we can come and share our history and tell our story and fill in those missing pages of history. As the voice of MPH Radio, we're going to open up our program with giving you something to think about, that is freedom, followed by MPH Black Minifact. And we're going to have a special acknowledgement, Cancer Awareness Month, which is in October, with a special poem by our sister, Reverend Mary Hunt, followed by a discussion on today's theme, part two, Our History is a Struggle. And we'll close out with a message to the community with Brother Alex Joyner. That is our agenda for today. We'd like for you to join us by calling in at 818-337-0016. Hit 1 and share your thoughts or your opinions on any kind of issues or questions that we will discuss today. So at this particular time, what we want to do first and foremost is just briefly give you something to think about, and that issue is freedom. As you know, freedom is something that is often talked about, fought over. We have lost millions and millions of lives in the past and today, all around this concept of freedom. So we would think it would be important to you to at least to define what it is that you can die over. And this concept of freedom, we will hear your concept of freedom. And this concept of freedom is, or has been properly defined as, having an ability and a means to control those necessities for life. That's right. What is freedom? It's having the ability and the means to control those necessities for life. What do you think about that concept, and how does it fit into your definition of understanding freedom? Well, we just want to start off with you a little something, something to think about. Next, we'll make our transition to our sister Susie, who is a contributor of Numeral of Missing Page of History at MPH Radio, and she's going to give you some little MPH Black Mini Facts from October 12th to the 18th as it relates to our history. Sister Susie, we're going to bring you in. Welcome to MPH Radio, Sister Susie.
Okay, good evening. I'll be giving you some mini black facts from October, the TRSP calendar of 2021. The first one is Emma S. Ames, American astrophysicist, works along with Einstein and others in developing quantum theory of physics, and this was done in 1883. Also, we had Joe Anderson, African slave, help invent the grain harvester reaper in 1831. Julius Nyerere, first president of Tanzania, died in 1999. Also, history of the month of October, we had the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense was formed in Oakland in 1966. And we had John Brown, who was an anti-slavery freedom fighter, raided Harper's Ferry in 1859. And the last but least, we had the Black Consciousness Movement of Azania, which was banned in 1977. I've just given you some black historical facts for the month of October.
Okay. All right, Susie, I'd like to thank you for your black mini facts. And at this point in time, as we stated earlier, you know, this month of October has been dedicated to highlight and share with the world around this issue of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We'd like to make our little small contribution to this month on this day of the 21st of October by bringing in our supporter, our member, and our friend, Brother and Sister Mary Hunt. She would like to do something in honor of and in tribute to Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Sister Mary, welcome to MPH Radio. We will now turn the mic over to you. Welcome to MPH Radio.
Praise God, I'm going to be reading, God knows what you are going through. You do not walk alone. He has sent you lots of company, unseen and unknown. But yes, you have your family and you have your friends. The company that I'm speaking of is the unseen heavenly sort. God sends special angels, so loving and so dear, to walk with you along this path that's fraught with doubt and fear. Now, there may be those that have gone on, and they loved you so much, or other souls that haven't sensed to give that special touch. But I know they are around you. They are upon your left and your right to carry you when you can't walk, when you can't feel, and you cannot fight. So don't despair and don't give up. They're there through thick and thin, and with these angels, the battle is not yours. The battle is the Lord's. Remember, God's got this. Hope that you have enjoyed that poem, and I do have a very short prayer for you today also, and we want to ask the Lord to please be with everyone that is waiting to be rescued. What is going on in this country today? Keep the safe and bring help to them quickly. God bless everyone that has been affected by this storm and surround them, God, with your love, your protection, and your angels. Millions of people are praying for you, and we're praying for your loved ones. So we pray for wisdom. We pray for hope. We pray for strength, spiritual understanding, endurance and discernment, purity and comfort, protection, sanctification, and most of all, God's healing. In Jesus' name we pray for the universe. Amen and amen. Thank you very much. And I give the mic back to you, Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Sister May, for your beautiful poem and prayer and your concern and all that concern on this question of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We understand that's an issue that is affecting our underserved communities and our communities. And the more we can do things together collectively, the better position we'll be in to solve the various issues that confront us. So we'd like to thank you for your contribution to today's program. And at this point in time, what we're going to do is go to a break, a station break with music with a message. And when we come back, we would like for you to join in with us at 818-337-0016 as we discuss our theme today, which is part two, our history is a struggle. That's right, our history is a struggle. We'll have some discussions on certain aspects of our history, and we'd like for you to join in with us, and we'll be right back. You're listening to MPH Radio.
It's all right with me. wake up. I just came to see
transition to the theme today, part two. Our history is a struggle. That's right, our history is a struggle. Once we embrace our history, means that once we embrace the reality, the need to struggle, because you know it's only through struggle where you make progress. As Frederick Douglass said, where there's no struggle, there's no progress. So if we are people doing progress, we must struggle. So we're going to talk about a few items that we have chosen this week to represent the theme, our history is a struggle, and we encourage all our listening audience And we'd like to thank all of our creative producers who created various documentaries and segments on YouTube that we will discuss for doing such an excellent work in terms of, one, identifying the importance of our history, two, giving us something to think about, but more importantly, just telling our story. That's what MPH Radio is all about. We want to tell our story. So at the beginning of time, we're going to discuss this documentary titled Terrified Black History. They are hand to teach in school today. It said Terrified Black History. They are hand to teach in school today. If you get a chance, please check out that documentary and heed a call and learn from it. So we're just going to discuss some points of views from that particular documentary that we think typifies our theme today and maybe a point of interest. If you'd like to share and join in with us, please feel free to do so by calling in at 818-337-0016. Hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. So Brother Alex and Susie, we're going to just give the people something to think about in the concept of the first video. Terrified Black History. What are they hiding from us in terms of not to want to teach these things in the school? When I look at that documentary, I think it raised a really serious, an important philosophical question that this society and the Western world don't want to acknowledge, and that is, how do we properly define what is Africa? When you look at that documentary, it starts off as Africa being the beginning and the cradle of humanity. It's so Africa has been the cradle of humanity, and how do you define Africa? So from your own perspective, wherever Alex, and then I'll come to Susie, how do you address those two questions? Africa being the cradle of humanity, and how do you define what is Africa? Brother Alex.
Okay. Well, thank you for giving me another opportunity to share with the listeners and callers and the panel, and on a subject that not a lot of people are again discussing, because most of the time when I was growing up, there was a lot of ignorance about Africa itself and the people, because we had pictures on, TV shows like, and movies like Tarzan and different things that, you know, showed one view of Africa, you know, with the animals and the elephants and the lions, and always there was a European that seemed to know everything. Yet he was in a land that he was totally unaware of. But he could command so many different people to do something, regardless who the actor was, whether it was from the movies or the Ten Commandments or Ben-Hur or whatever. It was always these European actors or American actors that always seemed to take the vital role and then made their own presentation of what Hollywood would consider Africa or Northern Africa, including Egypt, you know, give us an opinion of how we were. And so I grew up with the knowledge of the Pygmies and the Watusis and different tribes that were there, but I had no understanding of their government and their education and their infrastructure that was in Africa, their government, you know, their religious teachings and stuff like that. So when we look at the first beginning, as I've said many times on this show before, yes, that's where it all started. You know, DNA proved it, that Africa is the beginning. And out of Africa came everything else. So as we go into northern Egypt, which at that time became so populous, and that's where most of the history, because the hieroglyphics and everything were recorded. But when we realize what the true meaning of faith and religion and different things like that, that older stories of the flood and different things like that, have been passed down to other religions and all. And they've taken so much from that and moving forward. But we found the remains, you know, of bodies, hundreds of thousands of years old, you know, to prove that Africa was the beginning. And again, I reinitiate that DNA proved it. So when we look at the intelligence coming out of Africa itself, it is spread around the world. And all these nations we have looked at and discovered that they are in almost every nation. And I'm pretty sure there are Africans in every nation as they travel or whatever. But to say to settle there as free men and free women, then I would say that is a different type of African, that one that became enslaved. So I think we need to keep that, you know, in mind today and separate, that there were actually two Africans. And I'll throw around the indentured servant from African a little bit. But I would truly say that, in my opinion, and I please hope that everyone respect that, but in my opinion, they were free Africans that left there on their own. And then they were free Africans that conquered Persia, Greece, and got to the gates of Rome, as Hannibal did. So we have to remember a lot of free Africans that left. And the ones who come as in free will to travel today all over the world. But then we have to look at the dark history of the ones that were shipped around the whole world in chains and bondage and were mistreated and taken for granted. So Africa, to me, means the mother of all things, the mother of all men. It means motivation. It means spirit. It means a challenge that we as men can be better to the whole world. So not only is it wealth in minerals, but Africa is wealthy in people. And I thank God that I know so many Africans now in my adult life that has changed that perception from those shows and movies that I saw as a child that showed me a side of Africa that did not exist, but was only perpetuated to make me feel less of myself, being that they were my ancestors. So now today, I know the pride that every time I call on one of my African brothers and I ask them to network with me, talk with me, give me advice, give me some of that ancestral wisdom and knowledge, and make peace with me. To know that even though the water has separated us from the beginning, but the heart of both of us beat together to move forward in the liberation not only of Africa, but the liberation of the mind and the wealth here in the Africans on this continent and around the world. So Africa is everything to me, and it always will. And I turn it back over to you, Ms. Lee.
Thank you, Brother Alex. Sister Susie, how would you address or define what do you think they mean by Africa was the cradle of humanity, and how do you define Africa to you when you saw this documentary? Sister Susie.
Okay. Africa, to me, naturally, they had all the riches, which we didn't learn about. Also, they provided the general input into our heritage, which is really who we are from back then up to present day. They all their religions were shaped by Africa. And also, we know it's the birthplace of humanity and the origin of early religions. This is why basically they don't want to teach it in the history classes, because it's going against the norm that they've been teaching us all these years. And also, when you look at Africa, it provided us with that culture, that belief. and to know exactly who we are and where we actually came from. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Your point is well taken. And the points that y'all have expressed so far, it seems to me that by understanding where Africa was and is, and looking at the importance of it being the cradle of humanity, it would change the whole narrative of how the West has presented Africa. And by changing that narrative, it also changed the self-hate that African people have developed among themselves as a result of it. I mean, when I was looking at this particular document, I thought it was interesting and raised many important issues that I think we must become conscientized about Africa. When we talk about this, as you alluded, Sister Susie, it was the foundation and the beginning of the conception-wise and creation of all the major religions. And Africa, traditional religions, has had an impact on all new forms of religions that man and woman practice today. It also raised the question that human beings view the spiritual world from many points of views. Some saw the position of the universe being created by a god or by gods, be more than one. One of the things I thought was really important for the scientific community, it raised the issue about the importance of understanding dialectics, the development of the negative and the positive forces. But more important, it says something I thought really interesting, medical-wise speaking. And that is, Africans knew the importance of your body. I repeat, it knew of the importance of your body being in an alkaline state. Your body is going to be in two states, either acidic or alkaline. It is the alkaline state that keep your body and you and keep your body and keep you from being healthy. Well, the alkaline state, you know, viruses cannot enter and penetrate your system, make you sick. But they understood the importance of that, which is affecting human beings today. Most of our people, their bodies are in a city state. And when you're in a city state, it allows your body to break down, catch diseases, and be impacted by many different kinds of viruses. So I thought that was really important in terms of the beginning of time, our people understood this importance of this importance of health and your body being in a alkaline state. And also, last but not least, it also talk about the connection between the physical and the spiritual world. And we recognize the two interact that goes together. So anyway, when we think about these things from a scientific, philosophical point of view, you know, the whole argument, understanding this issue of the physical world versus the spiritual world, is not something that came out of Europe and the West. The Africans brought this conception of the universe, some of these important perspectives. So these were the things that I have gotten from this particular documentary, and maybe that's one of the reasons why they are hiding it and keeping it from being taught in school. What you think about that, Brother Ali? You think that could be some reason why they're hiding, not wanting to teach this type of history and not really tell our story, Brother Alex?
Yes, Mr. Lee. That is the main reason. That's why I said, you know, as when I was going to school and what they taught us about African history, and it was just shameful because we never got an actual chance to understand the greatness of the people themselves. I remember once making a chart, and, you know, we did all the mineral resources of Africa. We even mapped out the countries and everything. But again, we never talked about the culture. We never talked about the religion. We never talked about the inventions that had came out of Africa. We never talked about the people, their language. You know, nothing that was supported to give me any type of inspiration as a young African-American in this country. So the documentary was wonderful. And I believe everyone, you know, should view it because it gave you every point to realize if this deepness was taught not only in the middle school, elementary, I don't think we hold on to as much. But I'd say middle school and high school is that most influential stage. And then once we move on to college, then if we aspire into major history and world history and stuff, but still have that content open, that is a requirement to still understand and be taught Black history in those first 2 years of college. And if you decided that's your major, then that's different. But I think everyone needs that experience from middle school to high school to college to understand the importance of Africa and African history, because it's the building block of everything that we do and use every day. It is so shameful that this knowledge is not accepted in this country that well, and is being taken out of schools, being taken out of libraries, is being taken out of society. And once you do that, you slowly begin to erode people's confidence in themselves. You know, we have to have something to be proud about ourselves. That slogan said, I'm Black and I'm proud. You know, I see so many flags from so many different countries, and I hate to remind everybody of this terrible incident, but if with the past week, there have been flags and prides of different countries who are now in conflict with each other. And they are proud to stand behind their faith and their country, whoever they may be. It is a question mark here in America for every African American in this nation. It's a question mark on standing behind that flag, as it was a controversy when the football players took the kneeling, the basketball players took the kneeling. It's a controversy in America. We will serve this nation. We'll give it our best. We've done it in every war. But the nation has not stood behind the African-American community. We have wrapped ourselves in the flag, just as Michael Jordan did on the Dream Team. Some say just to cover up a logo. But I think Mike at that moment, regardless how we feel about him, and regardless how we feel, when we as Americans accomplish anything, Black or white, I think we all take pride in that moment. But we know that the country has not always taken pride in us. So that's where we have to open up these minds that want to destroy our history and our legacy. Either we allow them to do it, or either we come forth and we break that old tradition that we're not good enough. So I want to see a lot more movement in the African-American community and in our African community, our Caribbean community, all the people of color. I want to see more movement, you know, to the pride in themselves, because otherwise our histories will be wiped out and we will be left out. And on that note, I turn it back to you.
Thank you, Brother Alex. And what we'll do now, make our transition to our next feature item for today, which is how Colonel Gaddafi rebels in the desert, will have prevented the Libyan floods. That's right, how Colonel Gaddafi rebels in the desert would have prevented the Libyan flood. I thought this was really interesting in terms of not only raising the issue of the importance of water management, but also just looking at the importance of how man can create technology, how it can alter the earth to make sure it create a more balanced agricultural system, a more balanced and sufficient use of water, more of a balance, of creating green lands and deserts, which will allow a country to be more productive agriculturally, to produce food, will become more independent. Everything he has laid out could have been prevented, would have prevented from the flooding of a whole city where thousands of people have lost their lives recently. But by them not fulfilling his project, this is what we have had happen recently in Libya. But it's a lesson, and it's a tool I think that humanity can use throughout the world, because this question of water management, we can see it's affecting the African community, even here in the border, in the borders of the United States, i.e. Flint, Michigan, Chicago have water issues. They have water issues out west. They begin to have waters in the inner city. But in terms of how they refuse to adopt such a water project, there are so many positive implications. Again, it's a struggle of our history, for understanding that when we want to create, develop, and become more efficient and independent, it becomes a struggle. So again, our history is a struggle. Brother Alex, what were some of the things that you that brought out in your analysis or looking at the documentary that you think of value that you'd like to share with our listening audience? This whole question of how this irrigation system that Gaddafi had created when building would have done many things for the country and would be a lot more efficient in terms of uses of water management. And can we use that idea and those technologies maybe in other countries? Those general thoughts on that particular documentary, Brother Alex, and then Susie.
Okay, Mr. Lee. You know, we run into conversations sometimes, and, you know, people, we read headlines before we start our own observation of what we truly need to know about people. See, once people tell you somebody is bad, somebody is awful, they doing this and they doing that, whatever, there got to be reasons behind the negativity. You know, there are some good things that a lot of good people tend to do for their own countries. And even if they are dictators or whatever, they still have visions that where they want to improve things for their own country. This plan is, again, shows you African ingenuity. You know, the team of experts, I'm sure, that he put together and everything had to have been excellent. You know, it is just amazing, even the concept of what they were doing. Because, you know, you're talking about an underground network of pipes and aqueducts, you know, that together with wells, underground wells, reservoirs, and different things. And we're talking about more than 1,300 wells, okay? And they're, you know, going to be supplying all this fresh water up to the northern cities. We sometimes forget how important Libya is to Africa because we don't know that much about Africa. So when we talk about Algiers and different places, you know, on the northern coast, because they have been in control by the colonialists for a long time, we tend to forget how important they are. You know, everyone knows Egypt, but not everybody knows Libya. You know, and Libya was on a good path up under Gaddafi to change a lot of things in his country. And this plan right here described it as the eighth wonder of the world, because it was so wonderful in what he was doing. With 70% of all the fresh water used in Libya would be coming from the south and heading north. And it would irrigate fields, provide better farming, better, you know, water for its citizens and everything. And it's just amazing, you know, how it was. And sometimes we got to think that the forces of how we could get our hands on some of this construction money and different things like that, because things cost now. And whoever gets the projects and stuff like that. And believe me, a lot of this stuff probably had to come from outside of Libya. I don't know if the financing and different things like that also had to come out, because this is such a huge project. So just like the Panama Canal, the Suez Canal, we talking about something big now. We're not talking about something little. So we're talking about an engagement of money from all over the world. And so how many people really wanted to get their hands in this money? You know, that has always intrigued me about, you know, this undertaking. And because it was on such a huge scale. So I'm so glad that I got a chance to see the documentary. I mean, it was unprecedented in its display, and I learned a lot. And again, it fortified, you know, my ideas. And hey, it could happen here in the United States. It could happen in Canada. It could happen in Mexico, in drought areas and different things like that. This is just a marvelous plan of how to pump water around the country and make it more efficient, you know, with today's technology. He had a wonderful plan and just did not get a chance to totally complete it, but it was a wonderful plan. And I return it back to you.
Thank you, Brother Allen. Susan, your thoughts on the documentary? This whole question of
management. Okay, one thing about the documentary, you realize why the Western world wanted to have him, wanted to kill him. And then on top of it, when you think about the resources would have been great agriculturally, and Libya would have had economic freedom. And one thing about this freedom, it would allow freedom to exist in other countries with this method. And they also knew dealing with those consequences, the problems he wanted to alleviate, they knew they just couldn't have it done. And because Gaddafi was brilliant, and that was one thing which they realized. So when you have somebody brilliant, you got to alleviate them because of the fact you don't want them to take their brilliance to other people. And it's a sad thing that it had to happen rather than them working with him. The sad thing is that Libya is still dealing with the consequences of his death, which could have helped, which would have helped a lot of countries this day in time. Thank you.
Thank you, Susie. I would just like to just say that for our listening audience, again, if you get the chance, please go to YouTube and Google how Colonel Gaddafi River in the desert would have prevented the Libyan floods. It offers a interesting insight in terms of a country fighting for its independence, its sovereignty, and how the West is determined not to let Africa and African countries to be independent. That's what really, that's the underlying message. But at the same time, you can learn so much from it that you can apply his idea, his concept, his techniques of the importance of water management to your cities and your country you may live in. So again, this typifies a good example of how our history is a struggle. It's a struggle. And for the last item for the day, before we open up our airlines, I will ask our members to respond to a documentary on bees, black invention claimed by white people. Bees. Black inventions claimed by white people. Now, I thought that was, you know, interesting to the type of inventions. We hear about some inventions, but we have made so many inventions. And I'd like to talk a little bit about this whole question in terms of when we look at that documentary, this whole question, how they made it so that if you was an enslaved African, your ingenuity, your creativity will not be given proper credit, and will be often stolen from you, as well as it will be made into a commodity which again, their community profit off of our labor, our intellectual property, and our will. Brother Alex, when we talk about these black inventors claimed by white people, your take from that particular documentary, Brother Alex.
Again, Mr. Lee, I have to say, I don't know where my brother finds everything from, but I tell you, you are a scavenger. If this was one of the most interesting documentaries, you know, I've ever seen. Because, you know, we all know about black inventions. We studied them in school all the time and whatever. And we hear about black inventions, you know, today of different blacks that have developed stuff, you know, useful today. Just as such as, you know, the camera on the phone, cell phone, you know, the LED light. I mean, there are just so many inventions that come out of black minds, even today. Even the concept with the digital printer and different things. They're just so much. I mean, if we could just intone our black youth today to do half the inventions of what their forefathers did, who were slaves and bounded in. I mean, because today they can make money. Yesterday, they couldn't even put the name on it, you know. But today, it means a huge, huge, huge difference. So in the whole story itself and documentary impressed me. And one of the things that impressed me, you know, the most about it, you know, was Miss Ellen Edgen with the washing machine ringer. I don't want to tell my age, but, you know, there comes a time when, you know, you reminisce back and you say, you know, when clothes washed in a washing machine, and I'm going to go past the little board that I used to see my grandmother, you know, put in a number two tub, if people know what the number two and number three tubs are, and they would bend over and they would wash their clothes up and down a flat board with piece of metal on it, and some of them just use wood and rock, whatever, to wash their clothes, to get them clean. And, you know, then we come a little bit forward, we had a washing machine, and then there was a wringer. And you put your clothes between the wringer, and you turn the wringer with your hand, and it slid between two rollers and mashed the water out. We didn't have to wring it by hand. So we have to look at the greatness of someone even deciding to do something like that. But the gentleman that invented the elevator got nothing. The gentleman that invented that snowmobile, I would like to see his proceeds. I'm pretty sure it was almost zero. When we look at from the another item that they talked about, you know, the cotton shaver, and we can go back to the cotton gin and a few other things. But again, these men made nothing. And, you know, we go back to the telegraph with Granville T. Woods. And again, you know, was he able to profit, you know, from that knowledge of inventing it? And then Mr. Benjamin Montgomery and the sons and all. And Mr. Benjamin Broadlake, steam engine. And then Mr. Temple with the whaling harpoon, and then even Mr. Henry Board with the furniture bed, which he made the bedsteads furniture company. You know, all of these men, I didn't see where they were compensated for these ideas. But I understood that there were laws passed in 1858, but there were laws way before then that would not allow blacks to file for patents. White owners had to do it, or you had to partnership with somebody, or they bought your idea, paid you $5, $10, $20, whatever, and they stole your idea, and then they made millions. So, yes, we have to call these folks thieves, con men. You know, I mean, it was just a terrible, 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 terrible thing to take someone else's idea, claim it as your own, and make money from it and don't compensate the other person. But then to say that the African's intelligence and everything he learned and knew belonged to me because I owned him, that's even more hurtful. Because no man should own another man regardless what. That there should have been no slavery in this country. And if there were any good Christian people, it would never have happened. So we have to, you know, really look at that, you know, the nation was not following its true creed. It was against itself. And as we go forward into the future, we have to ask ourselves on many a times, you know, was this right? And should these families, these heirs now, should they be compensated? You know, that's another question, you know, that I want to know. Is it any way that we can compensate these heirs of these inventions and give these families back some generational wealth that was stolen from them by someone else? And then I'll turn the mic open and hear some more comments.
Do we say how do the reparation account for that? Brother Alex, I wonder when we talk about reparations, do people account for those factors? For all of this invention that African people have made for humanity to make the world what it is today and the lost economic opportunity that we were denied. So anyway, you're talking about picking yourself up by your bootstraps. We created boots, but then they stole them from us. What do you think about that, Brother Alex? We had some boots, but they got stolen from us.
Well, see, that's the main comment, you know, of today. You know, when I listen to people like Tim Scott and Clarence Thomas and different ones, and they tell me how they made it and this and that, and then I found out that, you know, affirmative action and everything else helped you to where you at, but now you want to turn your back on it. You know, it's just hilarious, you know, for you to even make that comment. When someone else, and we'll say we'll start a game, regardless what it is, from checkers to cards to anything else in life. If I give you 100 and I give the next player 1, he's already 99 times ahead of you. Any way you look at it, if I give one man 100 and I give the other guy 1, he's 99 times ahead. When I make laws to further make sure that you never get past 10, and I still am given 100 on my side, you're not even wearing boots anymore. So, you know, we can't even consider bootstraps because you're barefooted now. I will continue to outsource you and wealth forever. It'll never be a competitive phase between us because now you have that generational wealth where you can continue to buy, sell, trade, build, network, do whatever you want. I am at such a low level to even try and do anything until my life will forever, my children's lives forever will be affected. One or two crabs may get out of the barrel, but the barrel is going to be full with a lot of them just walking across each other at the bottom. And that's what we have to realize. A few of us in this capitalist society may make it. Oh, yes, there's going to be some Tyler Perry's and Magic Johnson's, that's going to be from Oprah Winfrey's and different ones that make it. But what about the majority? You know, when we seriously look at this thing, black wealth, let's really seriously take a look at it. I could name probably 100 billionaires, and not one of them would be white when I'm talking about over, I'd say $20 billion, $30 billion that I know successfully network back with maybe the other bunch. But if I go to the other side and I say, well, who networks with who? Then on the other side, they're all trading and shipping and partnership and discussing ideas and moving forward. So that's one of the biggest things that we have to learn in our community is we need to better network with each other. We need to better network with Africa, you know, to bring trade and commerce and ideas, you know, in to our communities to make them stronger. You know, there are no bootstraps for us to pull ourselves up by. That's just a myth. That's a comment. There are no bootstraps. And I hate people to keep saying, you know, need to pull yourself up by your own, do by your own. I did it. No, that's not how it happened. You were given wealth through generation of generosity because who your family was, where they came from. We look at this as an immigrant nation, people coming from all over the world. But still, as that statue sits in New York Harbor, welcoming the immigrants from Europe, we haven't set no statue in the Gulf of Mexico in welcoming immigrants from the Caribbean and from South America. That's where we need the wall at. You don't need a wall in New York. Don't need a wall in Canada. Don't need a wall in Alaska. But we wouldn't need a wall on the southern border. You know, what is the idea behind keeping certain people disadvantaged for life? You know, the American dream, or is it an American fantasy? And I turn it back to you.
Thank you, Brother Alex. And Susan, your thoughts on this documentary as it relates to themes, black invention claimed by white people. What's your take on that documentary, Susie?
I think when you look at the fact that Africans are sharp, intelligent, brilliant, dedicated, determined, strong-willed, innovative, creative, etc., that's just to name a few of our attributes. But the thing of it is, when we look back at our educational system, a lot of times we aren't providing these kinds of things to let us know that we have the ability to do anything. And then even just the process of the patent, I went to school, I got my degree in business management. It was up until my first year of college that they really even discussed the patent process. Most people aren't aware of it. And one thing about the invention, that's one of the first things that you really need to do, but they know that we didn't have that knowledge of that. And so we need to educate our young folks more on that we need to change all our attitudes that we can't do and then introduce them to these things, such as the patent process. And everything is, and the sad thing about the whole article is the racial hatred and the decades of conditioning that left our people more hesitant than others to follow their dreams. And that's a mindset that we need to push with the young folks. Follow whatever your dream, whether it's big or small, that you have the ability to do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. We said follow your dreams. Don't follow the American nightmare. So one of the things from this article that I got from was the question of, one of the issues, we got to raise the question, who was the most intelligent people? Those that were enslaved or those who did enslaving? Who was the most intelligent people? The article raised a critical issue. Those who were enslaved or those who were doing enslaving? Now, they want to make you think when you're a slave, you're less than a human, you have no human qualities. But for our people, for example, for our people, Frederick McKinley Jones to create the snowmobile, blacksmith made the cotton scraper. You got Glenville T. Woods the Saquon Mortuary Railroad Telegraph. Yeah, Benjamin Thornton Montgomery, the steam operator propeller, which today have big ships to navigate and move through water. Yeah, Benjamin Broadley, steam engine for ships. You have Whalen Hapu, Lewis Temper. You have Close Ringer, created by Alan England. You have the board bedstead, created by Henry Boyd Jr. All of these creations that benefit our well-being today all came from African people who was enslaved. You tell me, who was the most intelligent people? Those that was enslaved or those who were doing enslavement? Check that documentary out. We'd like to thank all the authors and researchers who did that documentary. Your job was well done. And this, again, is another reminder of our history is a struggle. Last but not least, panelists, I would like to just get a remark from y'all in terms of the last documentary, which was on the untold history, 10 presidents who were slave owners, the top 10 presidents who were slave owners. Untold history, and the reality is were more than 10. But in general, if you have the so-called family father spies out with the whole idea that you are less than a human, and you judge a man based upon what he does and not what he says, then it's no wonder why we live in the conditions we live in today in America. They have never accepted African people as being full-fledged human beings and entitled to basic human rights. What did you take from this article, Brother Alex, the top 10 presidents who were slave owners? Seems like they laid the foundation there in which this country continued to function from. Brother Alex, this is why, from my position, you will not be viewed as American. Brother Alex, your take.
Mr. Lee, just knowing how important your first leaders, what we call forefathers, because when we look at what's the foundation of a country and what it's built on, from the man that wrote the Declaration of Independence to the gentleman that sat there and did the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, to sit there and know that most of these men, almost 100% of them, were slave owners, to know that the Supreme Court justices were slave owners. And then you're backed by the most important figurehead in your country, which is the president. And to know that you are starting off from the beginning with slave owners, and not only just slaves, owned slaves, but made sure that they had ruthless slave overseers. And to know that their orders would be carried out, that they would be whipped and beaten. And I don't care if you lived on any of the plantation, you know, you were going to be whipped and beaten, as I said in the documentary, you know. And, you know, we know the women were raped, not only by the overseers, and we find out that a few of the presidents, not just Jefferson now, you know, I got maybe 5-6 books here that talks about Sally Hemings and Jefferson. But I also got books here that talks about some others that had children. So, you know, that's the focal point that we have to realize, that we have put these forefathers on such a pedestal. But then that pedestal is reversed on the Native American. It's reversed, and it holds down the African American, and it holds down other races in this country also. And to promote an idea that you have second-class citizens, that you even envision that they are less than human, what kind of Christian man could even come up with some kind of garbage like that? You know, it wasn't the sign of the times. It wasn't something that everybody was doing. It wasn't a fad. This thing had to stand out. It had to be law of the land. I would truly say that not only there was a great hatred for the African race, there's a great misunderstanding of the African race. There was great disregard for the African race to even bring them over and to consider them as property and to be sold like cattle. You know, this is an eyesore on America that it can never remove, regardless what it does. You know, we can't take the stain of slavery off of this country because of its beginning. And when you can't take something off of something, the crust off of something, because now everything else is exposed, it get infected, and now the whole thing is going to die. You know, that's usually what happens. You know, you start uncovering stuff, everything comes to the light. Then people say, oh, my goodness, this ain't what we thought it was. You know, so it's a good plan to destroy the other person's history, knowledge, and everything, to hide their accomplishments and achievements and make it look like everything was good on the other side, but not on your side. Because we're going to say that it was good for you to be a slave, that you learned a language, you learned a trade, you learned not to be lazy. These are crazy things that the other side has came up with, you know, to say that this is what being an African, you know, in this country was and why we should deny him citizenship, the right to vote, the right to own land and property, like the right to marry, unless we say so. You know, this country has tortured the African for years, and he has traumatized himself until a lot of them even can't decide, you know, how bad we were even treated. It's hard to even accept that you got someone out here thinking that these presidents that for years, that many who wanted us to worship, they were ruthless. And that's a tough statement to say. But they were ruthless in keeping their ownership of slaves, as the documentary pointed out. Didn't want to get rid of them. Not at all. Washington increased this amount of slaves, especially when he got married. Jefferson increased his amount of slaves. He didn't want setting them free. He was adding to them, just like all the rest of them. They don't get rid of them. They won't set them free, even until they died. Then it was up to the wives to set them free. But, I mean, they were continuing to hold you in bondage forever, because that's what they thought of you, which was basically nothing. That's all. So when we hear the lies out here from TikTok to YouTube to everything else about, oh, it was good to be a slave, that's crazy. It's never good to be a slave. It's never a good day to wake up and you had to do something for someone else without pay or regard. And then that person could have you whipped, raped, beaten, burned at the stake, lynched, shot to death, sold away, whatever they pleased. Never good to be a slave. But these gentlemen, they had slaves, and they thought very little of them. And like you said, yeah, it was more than 10, more, and we consider 12. But then, you know, sometimes I wonder about that, you know. You know, if it was even more than that, even that 12. Because even though it was
more than Brother Alex.
Yeah, well, even, you know, in that time, we'd be still being, to this day, still being held in slavery. And I mean mental slavery. you know, to someone else. So, you know, we got to get out of this mental slavery so that we can, you know, liberate the true meaning of our freedom and enjoy them and elect people who understand the principles of this government based on capitalism, that we were here to make them profit, to make them wealth. That's what it was all about. You know, we were here free of charge to make this country grow and become the richest nation that ever was. You know, we got billions and billions of dollars that we send around the world all the time. But when it comes to helping the black community and black colleges, they couldn't even help the black hospitals. I mean, it's just ridiculous what this country can't do for its black citizens, Negro colored citizens, what it can't do. But yet and still, it can spend billions of dollars and don't even wink at a moment's notice to help someone else out. But when the black hospitals needed help to keep from shutting down, there was no money. Black HBCUs shutting down, there's no money. You know, if you got a great idea, there's no money. But we can take it over here and you can give it to a European American. We got all the money that it won't. We can go take it to someone else from outside of this country, and we can support their idea. But we can't support one that's homegrown, just like those inventions we were talking about earlier. The money is not there. So we have to band together ourselves and take care of ourselves, because these 12 presidents weren't as body documented, weren't thinking about us, never have. And we have to start thinking about ourselves, because the government, we're not their number one agenda. Not at all. We might be on page 597, but we're not their number one agenda. We're so far in the back, and they'll never see our needs. Not at all. Don't care for them. All lip service, regardless what party it is just lip service. But we have to keep pressing. Keep pressing, you know, to make this country amend to the wrongs it has done, starting from these 12 presidents. And I'll give it back to you.
Thank you, Alex. You're listening to MPH Radio. We're discussing our theme today, part two, our history is a struggle. We have some listeners who've been on the line for a while listening. I'm quite sure they may have some comments or raise some points of views or some of the issues that have been discussed today. We will open up the lines to see if they have any questions or comments on this particular thing. Our history is a struggle. We now will go to caller. Your last four numbers are 4298. 4298, welcome to MPH Radio. Any questions or comments, caller 4298. Okay, caller 4298. While you wait for you to make any comments.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, caller.
I've been listening to the presidential thing, so I missed some of the comments. Where are we now?
We just have a general discussion, caller, on this whole history of the 10 presidents who were slave owners, and what does that mean? What does they say? What does it say to our people in this country and around the world when your so-called family father start out viewing you as a human being to be enslaved?
Yeah, well, when history is written from the viewpoint of the slave, then we will have truth. The oppressor is always the most revolutionary, and, you know, so, you know, the slave-owning presidents, you know, are part of the U.S. capitalist project that has never really been overthrown and continues to this day, imperialism and capitalism. And so white superiority is embedded in the founding fathers' documents, and it hasn't really been uprooted. So we have a lot of work to do in terms of uniting and struggling together to overcome the oppression that we get as a people, and you know, we need a revolution. We need a whole new organization of the state. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. We also have caller. Your last four numbers are 9582, 9582. If you have any questions or comments, we may return the mic over to you. Welcome to MPH Radio. Any thoughts from caller 9582? Welcome to MPH Radio.
Good afternoon. I was listening to the invention part, and how they have taken over our inventions and made them better for themselves. I'm in the process right now of a class action suit where I had did an invention, and the company that, and you have to pay for this. You put out all this money for your invention to be put forth, to you thinking that it's going to go somewhere, and then you're doing all of this waiting, and they sending you all of this false literature, like, you know, they got it, you know, to different, you know, people and companies and stuff like that. And then to wind up finding out that they were actually exposed and, you know, it was never processed. It never went anywhere. So, yeah, it's terrible how they just take advantage, because, you know, people want to get better, want to get ahead. But in the process of that, they're scammed, and that's a bad thing. So I'm hoping and praying that, you know, at least I get back the money that I had to put forth for it to go where it went. And it wasn't no little chump change either, you know, and that, you know, that I get that back. But it is sad, you know, people have dreams, aspirations, and try to get ahead. But they're scammed. They're just taken advantage of, and you think that they're good, reputable companies, and they turn out not to be so. So that's it.
You know, caller, still laughing for a second. I just like to get you to respond to my statement or my comment, caller. I felt like you're a continuation of being victimized by our history, of how they have enslaved our people and utilized their intelligence. Because even in this documentary, it talks about how the system of patent, you go and patent your inventions, how many times, even when they did that, they took their ideas and stole their ideas and never gave them credit. So it seems like you damn if you do and damn if you don't. But one thing I would like to say to you, if possible, if we had your permission, we would like to stay in touch with you, get back what you call, and see if we can help you in some kind of way to get justice. Because what I believe, what I heard from you, most likely they probably have taken your ideas and give it to someone else, and they can go and develop, enjoy it, and enrich it, and get rich off it, unfortunately. That's what it sounds like to me. But anyway, Carla, if we have your permission to get back in touch with you, we'd love to do that, to see if we can be some kind of way to be supportive and help you in your struggle as it relates to that. And your response, Carla.
Yes, you can get back in contact with me. I don't know since, you know, what would happen, because I did do the class action thing, and, you know, I don't know. I got all my paperwork and everything, so I don't know if it limits me to go any further for sure.
I got you. Okay, so we'll get back with you, Carla. We got your number, and I will get back in touch with you. Let's stay in touch. But this, again, this is history. You're a part of making history and creating history. This is what we have always done. And you're a good example of that theme today. Our history is a struggle. And that's what it is. So, Carla, we'd like to thank you for your comments. We'll stay in touch. And what we're going to do right now on MPH Radio, we're going to take a station break. And when we come back, we'll have a message to our community, some announcements, and our founding thoughts. This is MPH Radio.
Thank you. sitting in the morning sun. I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in. Then I watch them roll away again. Yeah, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay. I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Gonna change. Everything still remains the same. I can't do what 10 people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone. It's 2,000 miles I roam, just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time.
One would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend, and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers?
If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers?
We'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio, and we're discussing part two. History is a struggle. Today's date is the 21st day of October, 2023. At this point in time, we're going to make our transition to Brother Alex, a message to the community. Then we'll close out our program with some final announcements and thoughts from the voice of MPH Radio. So right now, Brother Alex, we're going to make our transition to you. You will give a message to our community. And that message will be what, Brother Alex?
Well, for the day, Brother Lee, it will be about the ropes of hate. On April 20th, 1939, Billie Holiday recorded the song Strain. Fruit on the Commodore label, and it became an immediate hit. She essentially produced it herself. She recorded it live with a small ensemble she created in the studio. No other label who heard her demo would even touch it. But on a trip through the South, she gave her version of what the real trauma, the Negroes, were going through on a day-to-day basis with Jim Crow law that prevented the whites and brought hate and cruelty to the Negro. She was scared people would hate the truth of her message and call it a protest song against white supremacy that had stood proudly in the South since the country's beginning. She didn't want to alienate herself or her audience. She wanted to awaken them to the terrible conditions and fear that the Negro lived under to survive. To see a man hanged just for being black should be a hate crime. It was ordinary to falsely accuse a Negro, then form a mob, and go out and remove him from his home or business, even from jail. Then they would drag, beat, stab, hang him, and finally shoot his body full of holes. They celebrated afterward like they had done a great thing for their society because they took care of an uppity Negro who thought he was as good as a white man. Then if they were arrested for his death, no all-white jury would convict them or punish them. Often, though, the family of the deceased victim would be ran out of town or county, and all the family assets would be given to the ones who murdered him. This scene was repeated over and over again in many states. Billie Holiday was the first to bring this to the nation's attention in music. Yes, Strange Fruit was a sign that the ropes of hate hung high in the South. Abel Meripool, who wrote under the name Lewis Allen, was the English teacher in New York City in the 1930s who saw a photograph of two black men in Indiana. He wrote the poem Strange Fruit. He and his wife first set it to music and sang it around several New York City venues. Then they gave it to Holiday after her trip down South And she was convinced by what she saw that the nation must be awakened to the ropes of hate for the Negro in the South. I do not believe one can explain the feelings of anger someone has when they never met the other person they want to do bodily harm to. Are we so cruel and evil that we cannot talk to each other like civilized human beings? What is the narrative today to hurt and humiliate someone we don't know? Why is violence and fear so widespread? Why does misinformation and lies bring out guns and weapons of mass destruction on civilian lives? Why do we seek war instead of peace? Why are we so bent on self-destruction of our society? I had an opportunity to witness before the governor of South Carolina the part of two of my family members who had been wrongfully executed by the state. There were two others not exonerated, and I will continue to seek their pardons. My family members were falsely accused of killing a Southern Civil War Confederate traitor to the nation and were put to death even though there was no evidence against them. The sheriff did all he could to keep them in jail until their execution. The governor and others didn't want them executed, but a mob had formed, and innocence meant nothing. They wanted a hanging and nothing less. A state electrocution was done in less than 2 months, and all four innocent men died. The citizens who sought their murders wanted their land and their money. They were the richest blacks in the county, with large land holdings and beautiful homes that the white citizens hated. Something had to be done legally to take it all from them was the talk of the white community. It took almost 100 years for the state of South Carolina to correct this wrong. Still, no property or money was returned, nor were the surviving heirs ever compensated. Justice was not served here, only an appeasement to politics. Before the marker of Anthony Crawford, who was born about 1865 in Abbeville, South Carolina, not far from where my family members were tried and killed. Someone at the courthouse in Newberry County told me to go there and see what real hate for the Negro was doing Jim Crow. I found out that Mr. Crawford had 12 sons and 4 daughters. He had acquired over 600 acres of land as one of the wealthiest men in the county. He was ambitious and proud. It was said he stated that he would not be beaten or broken by white men. The day that a white man hits me is the day I will die. He was co-founder of the Industrial Union of Abbeville County, which was devoted to the material, moral, and intellectual advance of the colored race. He attended a church and gave back to his community, and many looked up to him as a mentor and motivator. He believed in voting rights as well as all rights guaranteed by the Constitution and the Freedom Amendments that follow. On October 21st, 1916, Mr. Crawford was bargaining over his cottonseed for the sale to W.D. Barksdale, a white store owner. Once he disagreed with the low offer for his product, Mr. Crawford left the store, and one of Barksdale's employees followed him outside and hit him from behind with an axe handle. Crawford called for help, and he was arrested by Sheriff R.M. Burns for his safety as a mob of whites began to form. Barksdale began organizing a lynch mob to teach Crawford a lesson, to whip and humiliate him and humble him if possible. to honor and kneel to a white man's demands without incident. Later, in a cotton mill, as Crawford tried to get back home to his family, he was mortally stabbed. He was again taken to jail. The mob, angry now, broke into the jail, disarmed the sheriff, and took Crawford. They drug him down 3 flights of stairs and to a bloodthirsty mob of over 200 whites who were insanely cussing and spitting on him. They beat him with rocks, wagon boards on his body. The mob then dragged him by a rope around his neck through the black side of town as a warning to all other blacks to not get involved. Then they stole a lumber wagon from a black driver and took Crawford's lifeless body to the local fairground. They hung his body to a tree branch, and the armed whites shot his body with over 200 bullets, riddling it to a bloody pulp. This mob truly resented his wealth and standing in his community. The newspaper's headline after lynching read, "Negro strung up and shot to pieces." The county coroner's report stated that Crawford died at the hands of unknown parties. The mob attacked Crawford's children and their extended family on October 23, 1916. They expelled the family from South Carolina, taking possessions of all their property and wealth, and closed down all the black businesses in Abbeville. Let me repeat that now. They closed down all the black businesses in Abbeville. Many blacks left all they had acquired and fled at the threats of violence against them, thus leaving behind generations of family wealth to the whites who killed Mr. Crawford. There was nothing left to any descendant. This incident, along with many others, made me fight for the anti-lynching laws. We can only move forward and not backwards as a people to keep from suffering at the hands of those who do not want equality and justice. And I thank you, Mr. Lee, for giving me this opportunity to read that.
We'd like to thank you, Brother Alice, for your message to the community, and we'd like to remind all of our listeners that a message to the community by Brother Alice Joyner is a reflection of his thoughts and his writing, and not necessarily of the station, its affiliation, nor its members. So I'd like to thank you, Brother Alex. In closing, I'd like to just make a couple quick announcements, which are, number one, MPH Radio is a biweekly program that comes on every other Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can listen to this program every other Saturday, which means the next program will be November the 4th at 1 p.m., so please put that on your calendar. Also, we have a live TV show that comes on in the Virginia metropolitan area on Comcast Channel 95 and Verizon Channel 36 that you can listen to at 11 p.m. on the weekends, which includes Fridays, Saturday, and Sunday. And at the present time, if you listen to this program, you'd like to become a part of our family, actively participate, you can do that by sending us an email saying that you would like to become a volunteer and a member of MPH Radio by sharing your skills, your talents, and your time and energy. Though we will not turn no one down, we need writers, we need readers, we need fundraisers. I mean, we need people who can do website design, you name it. We can use your skills. If you have interest to help build this institution, become a part of it, please just email us at mphradio@yahoo.com. That's mphradio@yahoo.com. At the same time, if you'd like to support us financially, you can mail us at Missing Pages of History 1 missingpages@yahoo.com. Again, you can get us with a blessing at missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com. Until next time on the 4th of November at 1 p.m., we would like to ask everyone to continue to strive to go forward ever. Life is never. Remember that we don't tell our story, who will? We'll close out today's program, which is part two, Our History is a Struggle, with our closing musical selection, is that we are here for all of us. And we'll see you on the 4th. We thank you for your support, for allowing us to come to your home this evening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Again, the key to moving forward is that we must continue to fill in our missing pages of history.
we are here, we are here. We are here for all of us. We are here for all of us. That's why we are here, why we are here.
When I was pregnant in jail, I thought I was going to have a baby and the baby would never be with me, but I was acquitted a month and 3 days before Tupac was born. I was real happy because I had a son.
When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said tears with my baby sister. Over the years we was poor than us a little kid. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hugging on my mama from a jail cell. And who's thinking elementary? Hey, I see the penitentiary one day. Running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a queen, mama, you always was a black queen, mama. I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare. Tell me how you did it, there's no way I can pay you back. But the plan is to show you that I understand.
You all appreciate it. Dear mama,
please know what I'm loving.
You all appreciate it. Nobody tell us it was fair. No love for my daddy cause the coward wasn't there. He passed away and I didn't cry, cause my anger wouldn't let me feel for a stranger. They say I'm wrong and I'm heartless, but all along I was looking for a father, he was gone. I hung around with the thugs, and even though they showed a young brother love, I moved out, started really hanging. I needed money of my own, so I sang it. I ain't guilty, cause even though I said it feels good putting money in your mailbox, I love paying rent when the rent's due. I hope you got the diamond necklace that I sent to you, cause when I was low, you was there for me. You never left me alone because you cared for me. And I can see you coming home after work late. You're in the kitchen trying to fix us a hot plate. Just working with the scraps you was giving, and mama made miracles every Thanksgiving. But now the road got rough, you're alone, trying to raise two bad kids on your own. And there's no way I can pay you back, but my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Baby, don't you know we love you,
and dear mama,
please know
what I'm loving. You all appreciate it. Pour out some liquor and I reminisce, cause through the drama I can always depend on my mama. And when it seems that I'm hopeless, you say the words that can get me back in focus. When I was sick as a little kid, to keep me happy there's no limit to the things you did. And all my childhood memories are full of all the sweet things you did for me. And even though I act crazy, I gotta thank the Lord that you made me. There are no words that can express how I feel. You never kept a secret, always stayed real. And I appreciate how you raised me, and all the extra love that you gave me. I wish I could take the pain away. If you can make it through the night, there's a brighter day. Everything will be alright if you hold on. It's a struggle every day, gotta roll on. And there's no way I can pay you back, but my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it.
Don't you know we love you, sweet
dear mama.
Place no one above you.
You all appreciate it.
Don't you know we love you.